This podcast was supported by 5E Leadership and Marketing, hosted by Teresa E. Gonzalez of LatinasB2B.com and LatinasB2B.marketing. For more information about podcasting, media and technology strategies, and business, reach out to us at info@LatinasB2B.com. Gracias.
Welcome to Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom, where wisdom comes from everywhere. This is a podcast about generational wisdom shared to help build a bridge for future generations and to build stronger communities through education, technology, and health. Welcome to Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom.
So welcome to the special crossover episode of Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. I need to share something with you that's been weighing heavy on my heart and should be on every parent's mind, and that's how we share our data, specifically about how we share our children's photos online. This episode was recorded pre-election results in early October 2024, and I felt it was appropriate to release it now. I needed some time and research to understand what I thought would be clear about how women, young girls, and boys are now being targets for sexual exploitation from online pictures and online chat rooms. You can catch our previous episode 70 with Julie Scalfo, founder of Mothers Against Media Addiction, to understand more of this crisis. For clarity and disclosure, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a healthcare provider, a lawyer, nor a software engineer, but I do bring in the experts, the tech professionals, the business leaders, and researchers who provide context, lived experiences, and facts to these discussions. What's transformative about these episodes, and I hope you do appreciate them, are the pivots in the life and the change makers we get to see and hear on this show. Because outside in the real world, we're constantly bombarded by the noise that we need to keep telling ourselves to keep our heads down. Don't make any waves. Stay silent and stay distracted. You don't need to talk about it today. Yet that silence is the abuser's greatest ally. So let me give you some critical current context about what we're facing and what we will be discussing in today's episode. Recently, on July 19th, the New York Times published an excellent article and reporting from Cecilia Kang, who covers technology policy and politics. The article that she wrote was referenced to AI-generated sexual abuse content that is flooding the internet. Now, what I'd like to do is to also kind of bring into context the whole big hoopla and distraction about the recent resurfacing of the Jeffrey Epstein files and his multiple convictions for sex trafficking of minors, most recently in 2019, but also his less prior convictions that have seemed to fade away, but doesn't excuse the fact that he was a sex trafficker. And this has been public knowledge on the DOJ government websites. Therefore, I thought this was the perfect time to release this episode to understand how technology, apps, and their platforms seem to be interconnected from that article to what's happening today and the victims, the women that are being targeted and the women that we're not considering as victims from this past, that we need to put regulations and safety measures into these platforms and online apps today. So let me break down some tech language for those unfamiliar with what we'll be discussing today. CSAM stands for Child Sexual Abuse Material. And what I'd like to say about that is that every smartphone, every laptop leaves a digital imprint, meaning your pictures, your videos. This is all information that gets stored on your phone or it gets stored on your laptop. But in reality, through the internet, it is also going somewhere that is being stored for you to retrieve it. Now, when you share this information through AI apps or on social media or gaming platforms such as Twitch or Roblox, and your photo storage and you're sharing all these things, this is creating a bunch of information that can be traced into these platforms. But yet these platforms are telling us they have no access to see this information that could be harmful. In essence, a black box. But yet this information is hashed, which we will discuss in this episode, about how it can be traced. The other thing is these platforms are failing to monitor or claim that their third-party partners have the right to create this information under Section 230. We will talk more about that in the next episode. So it's up to other platforms or nonprofit groups or online communities or software companies to take matters into their own hands to be the online watchdogs. Who are these platforms and data centers that lack content moderation or barely report their incidents of CSAM? Well, I think we can guess they are all owned by the major tech players. And that's Meta, Apple, XAI, Amazon Web Services, and of course, Google, the biggest operating platforms in the world. That means on the entire planet that sends and feeds and hosts all this information are Apple, Microsoft, and Google. We only have to look back at the inauguration to see who is standing side by side in this current administration. So this means that CSAM, the child sexual abuse material, is within these giant data centers that they all own. Yet there is no repercussions, regulation has been stifled, and the COSA Act, once again, which is the Child Online Safety Act, is being sidelined by none other than Mike Johnson, the House Speaker, and Steve Scalise, who is, again, on this issue, saying it's a hard no. And Mike Johnson said it would be problematic. And this was in an October 14th, 2024 interview with the Punchbowl News. Now, there's something I'd like to talk about that Meta is also deploying one of the largest data centers in Louisiana, which we did mention in the previous episode about how he's going to build this data center in Louisiana for more AI opportunities. And he's recruiting heavily for AI software coders and for AI staff. So these are too many coincidences glaring at us to ignore, but more women can speak up and use their power for change. And that's what we do here. We show up, we talk about it, we go to the polls, and we create a powerful tech safety movement. And we want to become the next voice for future generations to create technology that will be safe for all of us. So my next guest is this very amazing woman and mother of three children, Latina from El Salvador, and someone who is building a global movement against all this child sexual abuse and prevention. And her name is Rosalia Rivera. Rosalia is the co-founder of the Brave Movement to End Childhood Sexual Violence, as well as a co-founder of the Survivors Council of Canada. She is a certified practitioner of the Conscious Parenting Coaching Method from Dr. Shefal Tasbury, CPCM Institute, certified in the Canadian Center for Child Protection, Commit to Kids, and Child Sexual Abuse Prevention Training Program, and is an authorized facilitator of the Stewards of Children's Training by Darkness to Light, as well as On Watch. She is anti-trafficking certified. She is a CSA, which is a child sexual assault survivor turned thriver who founded her power to make change and break intergenerational trauma. She is a two-time TEDx speaker and child sexual abuse prevention specialist, sexual literacy advocate, rape culture disruptor, and also the founder of Consent Parenting. Welcome, Rosalia, to Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. Welcome, Rosalia. This podcast really is going to take center stage around the future for our children. And although I have no children, it is very important to me, this topic of online safety for kids. And the reason why I wanted you on this podcast is to really talk about your mission that you've started on Consent Parenting. You have a podcast, and also you've been noted in a lot of TV shows and accolades, and also just the work that you're doing globally around women, specifically young women, online in sextortion, which is increasing, and it is a global phenomenon that you also released and showed on LinkedIn of a small video that I would love people to check out, and we will have it in the show notes because it is incredibly eye-opening about what's happening to young women online through social platforms and also through advertising. So welcome, Rosalia, and I am so honored to have you on my podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, thanks. So a little back history. Rosalia and I know each other from a mastermind class by Denise Solar. So shout out to Denise Solar Cox out there. We came together and just really have been talking about a lot of things. We're setting intentions in the future. And one of them for me has always been, you know, why I started this podcast is to amplify the voices of women and allies that are really changing, pushing the status quo, changing the narrative, and trying to make a significant impact towards what we're doing for future generations. So Rosalia is originally from El Salvador, and she is an immigrant here, but she lives in Canada. And I want her to talk about consent parenting and why she got started in this realm of child safety online.
Thank you for inviting me. I love that you're doing this, and I love that the message behind your podcast. And I mean, I started doing this just because I'm a parent and also a survivor. And I understand the struggles of parents going through their own healing or even acknowledging of this issue and trying to raise awareness about it and trying to protect your kids. And then on top of it, the technology piece that you've eventually, there's no way around it, you know, that we aren't going to have our kids engage with tech at some point. And what does that look like? Like, I have a child that's about to turn 13 in about 2 weeks. And, you know, we've been very transparent with our kids about the potential risks online. And we try to do our best to monitor, but like, to be fully honest, it's hard for me. And this is the field of work that I do, like, to keep up. And so I can understand what other parents are going through and to hear the stories of victims because of how prevalent this is. And how, I was just thinking earlier, like, I wish that I could create a reel that shows like the number of parents that are coming out talking about their children's stories, you know, whether it's suicide or self-harm or addictions, anxiety, like trauma. There's so much evidence of it now. Like, how can you still have the mindset of like, not my kid, because it's so prevalent? So I'm just trying to sound the alarm and share what I know and share what is working for me and also what could work for, you know, hopefully billions of parents. But we have to start getting educated and talking about this.
Right. And one of the things that is very close to my heart is the fact that women are the highest targeted demographic online for harm, and many people do not talk about that. I talk about that in certain categories of the podcast, early days. It is around targeting women in chat groups. And this is what's happening to young kids online. The United States just recently put out the COSA Act, which is the Kids Online Safety Act, which came out in August, which was passed in the House of our representatives here, all came to the table and said, yes, this is an issue. It was also written in the New York Times by the Surgeon General, Mr. Dr. Murphy, I think it is. And he said that this is becoming very prevalent of an issue for our children. Now, there's a lot of conversation back and forth like, oh, we can't ban these platforms and we cannot keep our kids away because technology really governs a lot of our interactions and how we stay in touch. However, it is the industry itself and the advertising that drives a lot of this latency protections for children. It's like they know the programming and the algorithms behind the ads and what people are clicking on that is going to feed into our behavioral profiles. And this is the thing that I know because I was in the research departments of the two biggest companies, Google and Facebook. This is what they do for quote unquote businesses, right? It is the faucet of money that drips into their coffers. And those folks are also being fed into, you know, the lobbying aspect of technology to the House of Representatives. So it's almost like, how do we stop, you know, the harms through the platform? It's already out there. It's like, okay, now we're trying to take it back. But the kids and the women, the young women specifically, and this has been talked about on other podcasts that I've listened to, that they have been aware and they know this. And it's specifically young teenage women online, on Instagram, TikTok, all these that are feeding into a desperation of loneliness and the suicide rates and the bodily harm that has been happening to teenage women in those prime years has been increasing. Hence the COSA Act, hence the Surgeon General coming out in the New York Times saying, we have to put, you know, guardrails here into this new era of how we're using technology.
Yeah. Well, no, I really actually appreciate that you have that depth of knowledge on it, because most people don't. Like, most people don't even understand that. And it's understandable because they try to make it very cloudy, you know, the way that these things work on the back end. And it, like you said, it drives behavior. And we're talking about algorithms that intentionally harm. And because there's no cost, it's like whatever I need to do to get that data, that information, that attention, you know, that's what we do. Is it ethical? We don't care. You know, so we have to realize that they can't police themselves because they have a different agenda and it's not our kids. So we have to understand that. So I appreciate you bringing light to all of that, because it is an important factor in understanding motives, right? Like, what is going to drive a company to make changes? And it's really, you know, we have a lot of that power, right? We're consumers and we can change the way that we engage with this, right? So that we're not being used and victimized. And so it's an important conversation for parents specifically, because it's the kids, right, who are using this technology. And it's also even the adults, because they're consuming very unconsciously. And I'll give you a quick example of where these dangers lie, right? So when we're talking about kids accessing content that is not for them, but how easy it's made and how, you know, it gets accessed. So I think that the bottom line is this: we have to become conscious consumers, and we have to understand how it impacts our kids, how it impacts culture, how it impacts social norms that dictate whether someone thinks it's okay to harass someone in real life. Like, it has real world implications, because this is what we're fed, this is what we're given, this is what we're served. And if we're not conscious of, like, teaching our kids how to navigate this, like, this is where the education comes in, where parents have to become educated about these things. Media literacy is something that schools should be teaching, so that we're not falling into these traps. And then besides that, there's the legislation, right, of saying you actually have what's called duty of care. I like to put it like this as an example for parents. So imagine that you're dropping your kid off at the mall, right? They're 15 years old, 14, 15 years old. You drop them off at the mall and you're like, see ya. And you didn't really give them much instructions to be safe there. And every store is like, oh, let's walk into Roblox. Oh, there's a condo here where these figures are having sex with each other. Like, and you don't know that that store exists in the mall, right? But your kid just walked in there because Roblox isn't really taking time to moderate things, or, you know, Google isn't really blocking inappropriate content that's not made for kids just automatically. That should be even just for adults to be like, hey, we actually need to verify that you're an adult. Like, that would be like a mall store having an orgy that your kid could just walk into and just look around. Would you allow that? No, you'd be like, excuse me, we need ID to make sure that you're actually allowed to enter this space because it's adults only. It's the same online. So it's like imagining these companies as these stores, the mall as the internet, and or the tech company that you know, hosts those spaces, and holding them accountable to like duty of care, that you are doing what you can to ensure that your space is safe for everyone, right? So that's for starters, right? Something that we need to be aware of and get educated about.
Yeah, I mean, 100% on that, because that's a great example, because I remember, as many of us do, malls are not, you know, unless you're in the Midwest, you go to these strip malls and there's like, oh, I can come into the parking lot and there's like 8 stores I can visit, food, whatever. That is a great example, yes. But then there's like, you know, the cigarette and liquor store shop, and you have to have an ID. You can't purchase anything. You can't even walk in there because it is made for a specific age for you to go and buy their products, right? To even look around, you have to be 18, right? In certain states. So yeah, why not just have that on there? I mean, it seems so easy. We have to give our credit card and all of our information, you know, to Apple to buy a fucking song. We have to give all of our data information to go to the airport, right?
And did you know, by the way, that I think it's 4 or 5 states now that implemented laws to require that companies like Pornhub have to do an age verification process, which means they have to accept, they have to request to like have that verification before anybody can enter the site. They shut down and left those sites instead of doing the verification process.
Wow. Because they know they can stand up another window, quote unquote, another storefront to have it done. And it's just a workaround. Because if they shut it down, they just have a different IP address. I mean, this is how, you know, the dark web works. And they just have another way. But the advertising and the chat rooms are what are the gateways. And I've said this on other podcasts, is when I first started with my podcast, Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom, as I mentioned earlier, women are the highly targeted demographic. They are sex trafficked over the internet. And so when you put in Latinas or Black women, this was early days, dating advertising would come up, which are gateways to those porn sites and also to other sites that we don't know. And this was through Google, right? So there's been a lot of pullback now because it's all the content I've been putting out to change that kind of direction a little bit, but it still exists. It still exists out there in the internet. And the thing that I want to mention to people is this is also based on behavior of people that are going and looking for things, right? I just want to get your perspective on this, Rosalie, with games, right? Because a lot of kids love to go online and they play games, right? And I think you have an expertise around this in, you know, how do parents monitor that, or how can they work with certain technologies that you've interviewed people with having that capability? You know, it's like, it's up to us to do it. And if you don't know it, like we do, how are parents supposed to protect their kids, right? So can you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I want to start with some of the basics, but I think a lot of it has to do with just spending time with your kid, learning what they're doing, like understanding what their interests are and connecting with them on that level. And that's part of what consent parenting is about, is like honoring them as a person and trying to understand like what their interests are, and then just engaging more with them, because part of what they're seeking when they're looking for that connection elsewhere in a game is that connection. So if you can do it with them, you're reducing that risk right away. But even if your kid's older and you're like, I don't want to game with my kid, that's fine. That's not what I'm necessarily saying. I'm just saying get invested in what it is that they're doing online. Get to learn it a little bit better, because then you don't have to learn everything that's going on. You're learning what your kid is up to. So just from a basic level, I think that's really important. And it helps you build that connection. And there's a trifecta connection with kids and technology with you, where then they start to listen to you instead of feeling like you just don't understand them. So just from that basic level, it's really important. I think it helps parents focus their attention on like where it's needed. I think a lot of parents are like, now I need to learn about this and this and this. Like, no, you need to learn about what your kids are doing. So being invested in that way and like that human connection with your kids also strengthens your relationship, especially in the teenage years when they can be so easily influenced by other things. You want to be that trusted resource for them. So investing in that relationship and in making time to understand what they're interested in, even if it's boring to you, like some of the stuff that my kids are interested in, I'm like, I don't care. But I care about how it's being served. I care about like what kind of messaging they're getting. I want to see what they're up to and then guide them. But the other aspects of it too is like just talking about media in general. I think that's really important that we don't do enough. Like when our kids are watching a movie or a TV show or a YouTube video, have a discussion about what you overheard in a way that doesn't feel judgmental, but also is like getting them to question it more. What did you like about that? Who made that? What's the point of them making that? Getting curious to see if they understand those things. That's media literacy, right? So those are some basic ways where they're not going to fall so easily the trappings of advertising or the influence of their peers, right? Like you also getting educated about it yourself as much as you can and participating in the process. Like if you can contact your legislator in your state and tell them you support COSA and you want to make sure, you know, that senator, because I think it's going to the Senate now, right? You know, take on those kinds of actions. Like they may seem like a big thing, but actually might take like 15 minutes to make that call or to send that email. And it's worth it because we do need to hold these companies accountable. We do need to make sure that they are being forced into having to do duty of care because we've given them that chance. It's not like they can say, oh, why are you stopping us? It's like, you've had a chance and you did nothing. In fact, you made things worse. So we have to step in. So taking those actions is important too, just as much as doing the work with your kids.
Yep. Rosalia, you are the expert in this. And that's why I do this, is because you have your platform to give these tools and acknowledgement of how this has been going on and to educate parents, right? You have a platform. You also have a podcast. And I want you to start talking about, you know, where it is that you think that communicating with families or how to bridge that gap, right? Like you're talking about, like just have the conversation. But sometimes kids have their own phones. You know, that is the problem in school. And this is where we start getting into the predatory actions of young people and bullying, having their own phones. And then also using that information online. Can you talk about this a little bit? Yes.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, a lot of what I was saying was speaking to a demographic that has young kids because they're just starting to get into that stuff. You have a lot more control. But like you're saying, then you get to the point where your kids got their own device now. And how do you keep tabs on that? And those are real concerns, especially when you might have a bit of a lockdown on your own kid's device, but you don't know about their friends. Like that's a whole other thing too. I think first of all, like I said before, if you have that solid foundation, there are certain things that'll be easier to do in terms of monitoring or restricting if needed, right? Those things. But there is technology that you can tap into, that there are some great companies that are doing great work both in Canada and the US. But we need to like nurture those things too, right? And some of that technology, for example, is like bar bones, which are the ones that I wish that I had in Canada, but we don't have those here in Canada yet. They're available in the US and I think maybe Australia. But that way you can monitor your kids' stuff without being invading their privacy, you know? And that's part of the things he was like learning to trust your kid and all those pieces. And it's hard to do when it's like, it's not that I don't trust you. It's that I don't trust the rest of the world and these companies that are predatory. So besides educating them about the content that they're consuming and the kinds of choices that they make on those devices, because ultimately you're not always going to be there, but letting them know. So the Bark phone will monitor for specific language. So if keywords come up, it will flag your phone to let you know if there are any words that have to do with suicidal ideation, cyber harassment and bullying, any kind of sexual content. And there's one other type, but those are the principal ones that if those ones get flagged, and that includes emojis, like the use of certain emojis or emojis in a series, like they really do their research in keeping up with language and what's being used. So they have a really good tech. So they have a phone now, which is great. It used to be just an app, but now you can actually get their phones, and they're actually coming out, I think, with a watch version of that, which some like could be good for younger kids. But I'm not about like getting kids that are too young technology. Like, let's just slow it down, first of all, because the less exposure you have for your kids, the less control other people have over your kids' brains. And it's just, even from a like neurological perspective, it's not good for kids to constantly be looking at devices. You're just training the brain to do that, which hooks people more into that technology too early. So Bark phones are available in the US. In Canada, you can get a phone that's similar, not as great as Bark, but similar, called Pinwheel. So those are two good companies. And, you know, there's people like, there's organizations like Thorn, which are technology companies that are helping to also battle a lot of the back end, you know, technology pieces that can help find children as well as find predators. So Child Rescue Coalition is another really great one that's also a technology company. So there are people that are doing good things and trying to, you know, fight this fight. And I think those are also companies and organizations worth investing in.
Yeah, I really love that you have that knowledge about these phones. And are they partnered or anything with, like, you know, I hate to say it, but Apple or Google in that manner? Because if they're creating their own phone and...
Yeah, they're not connected. And part of the reason is right now there's an issue with Apple and, you know, the way that they are setting up their phones, which are completely anti-child friendly and child safe right now. It's actually one of the most unsafe. Like, there are three particular issues with it. One is that you can't report any kind of like harassment language or any kind of cyberbullying to Apple. You have to like go to their website, get their email address, email them a report. Like, you can do it through the phone. And to make it easy to report, like, what 12-year-old, 13-year-old is going to like go to their email and like formally write to Apple to say someone's harassing, like, you know what I mean? Anyway, there's other like technology that isn't that much better, which is why I recommend something like Bark at this point. Like, and I say to parents, like, vote with your dollars. Like, if Apple made a safer product for kids, I would say buy Apple, you know, but they're not. So anyway, the technology is there. Besides that, they also refuse to create a better hashing system for their iCloud users. And, you know, they tout themselves like being end-to-end encrypted. And we know that, for example, Facebook, I think it was just a couple of years ago, reported 17 million reports of CSAM on their platform. Yeah, CSAM is child sexual abuse material, formerly known as child porn. but we don't use that term anymore because it doesn't represent what it is. And so 17 million reports through Facebook. I think Instagram was like something like 11 million. And then Apple was 274, I want to say. And initially someone would go, oh, that means that CSAM is not being traded on Apple. But that's not accurate at all. It's actually one of the places where it's hiding the most, but it's not being reported. And it isn't until somebody is subpoenaed to release their iCloud, like they can't be searched. Whereas with other, like, whereas you can with Facebook. So because it's a free platform and they, you know, have a very different user agreement. Yeah. But it's like, it's not safe to post it there because you know that it'll be found. And this is, by the way, only known images that have been, that have what's called a hash. And this hash is connected to that image because it's previously been flagged and confirmed to be child sexual abuse material by the National Center for Child, for Missing and Exploited Children, which is a national database organization. So they record when an image has been confirmed to be a child abuse material, and it'll get flagged. And then somehow when that image is transferred from one place to another, that other place can screen for those hashes, not at the images. They're not looking at images. They're not looking at your content. They're just looking for that particular fingerprint on that file. So if they find that, they will know, okay, somebody, this IP address has traded this fingerprinted image. Like now they're going to trace and track that particular individual with, or at least that IP address, and start a potential investigation, particularly if they find multiple hashes being traded by that IP address. But Apple doesn't want to do this because they claim that it is a violation of privacy. Even though the technology is there to not be invasive to privacy and only specifically look for that hashed fingerprint on a file. So it's like, why are they not doing that? Why are you not doing that, Apple? Like, why are you, like, what's the vested interest there to, like, not look for those hashed file, like that, those fingerprints, that's all you're looking for? Because somebody said, like, there's people who are like, oh, but, you know, if I have like a video of my kid in the bathtub, it's like, if that didn't come up flagged as a legitimate file that was connected to an abuse case, or at least a legitimization, you know, by an organization like the National Center for Child Missing, you know, like, it just doesn't make sense to me. So it's like, why, Apple? What exactly is it that you're, you know, protecting there besides privacy?
And this is my question, because I'm sure people are like, well, how does Rosalia know about this? And Apple, how does she get that information? Because we're not conspiracy cuckoos here, okay? I've been at the place, you know, where I see the information. So Rosalia is also, you know, the information source here. So Rosalia, please tell us, share.
Yeah, so this is actually information that Apple has shared. They claim that their hashing technology isn't there yet, even though Thorn, which is a nonprofit organization that builds technology to help do this, you know, can tell you that the technology is there, is available. So it does, you know, it doesn't compute. And like, so if the average person might not know this, they might be like, oh, Apple just wants to protect privacy. And it's like, well, I don't know about that. Also, with the organization, I encourage people to check out HEAT, heatinitiative.org is an organization, also a nonprofit, that is taking on tech companies like Apple, which is like, you know, who takes on Apple. But they've been to like multiple protests. They were just in New York City at the opening for the iPhone 16 or whatever it is. And Tim Cook was there, and he's coming out of the store, and they're all like with their posters. Like they do some really cool campaigns, but also a lot of like in your face stuff. They've been in the New York Times. You know, Tim Cook has had to reply. I think they're very annoyed by the initiative, because we're, you know, we're not going away. I'm part of the organization now in to a degree. Like I go to, like I just was at the protest in Cupertino for their Developers Conference, which is like, I think they have two major conferences every year. But anyway, it was quite the experience. And it was interesting to see the developers there were, a lot of them were surprised. You know, there's a lot of awakening that's needed. And Apple is not getting my money until something changes, because that's not okay.
I know. I want to trade in my Apple phone. I did have a Galaxy Samsung as well, and that's on Android. So yes, say something.
I just want to say that I love Apple. Like, I was very disappointed. Like, if you hear my talk at the last protest, I was saying, like, Apple, like, the Apple of my heart. I used to love, like, I had, like, everything Apple, and I'm so pissed. I'm really pissed at them. Like, I'm really disappointed. One of the things that I said was, like, would Steve Jobs be proud of what this company represents now? Like, so, I mean, it's not okay. And Apple is huge. And, its products are hard to resist. But there's a lot of issues with the company and its ethics in a lot of different ways. So we got to change that.
Yeah. And, like, I firmly believe women are the ones that are doing that, like you and I and other women in so many other realms that are holding accountability. But also, like you said, the developers in Cupertino, when you came out at the protest and they're surprised, where is the transparency of just do your job and don't look up versus, well, there may be something here and I want to pursue it because maybe there is an issue. I know a lot of people want to hold on to their jobs because, you know, Apple is a very prestigious company. So is Facebook. So is Google. So are all these other monolithic companies that are just bringing in dollars and really helping people. But at the end of the day, that silence is what has brought us to this moment. And me, for one, I am coming out now to say these things and present these issues because I am, one, not going to be a part of being silent when this predatory action and child abuse has been going on, you know, for far too long. And it's in these devices now. So, Rosalia, in closing here, I really appreciate all this information. I mean, I am really now considering my consumer products, which we all should at the end of the day, how we're using technology. There's so many layers, and accountability at the end of the day really starts with us. So what would you like to leave our audience with today in the close here of working with your kids and helping us to learn more about, you know, consent parenting and how to educate ourselves around these technology solutions and things with our kids?
Yeah. Well, I loved our conversation. I feel like we need to, like, talk again because we just, like, skimmed the tip of the iceberg. But I think, number one, look at ourselves and our tech habits. Are we using technology, or is technology using us? And then how are we modeling that behavior to our kids? Because they're looking at us as the role models. So being aware of that, using technology for good. Like, I love technology. It helps me every day. I don't want to not participate, but I just want to be a much more mindful consumer. And so just be interested in what your kid is doing. Focus on that so it doesn't overwhelm you, because it could, especially if you have more than one child who's on technology. So just take it day by day. Don't feel like you have to give up and be overwhelmed, because that's what they want. They want you to feel overwhelmed. They want you to not and care. Like, overwhelm leads to apathy. We want to stay away from overwhelm, and we want to stay proactive and just, you know, focus on looking at yourself. Because the more you realize for yourself what your habits are, the better that you can be in the more disciplined you can be even with your kids about it. Because if you're not disciplined with yourself, you're not going to be disciplined with your kids. And unfortunately, because of the algorithms and the way, you know, the way that we just mindlessly consume it, it will just keep leading us down the wrong path. So we need to look at what our habits are. How can we take back the power? How can we own it and use it for good and hold people accountable? Like, at the end of the day, we're all in this together. And we are the internet. So we are saying we want better.
Oh, Rosalia, thank you. From Canada to Cupertino, she brought herself down here to say, I want this to stop. So she is the founder of Consent Parenting. She has a podcast also around this to help parents who want to learn more, and her guests. I just listened to the most recent one about the Bark phone, which is here in the U.S., which is amazing. And I really would love to have you, Rosalia, back on the podcast so we can dive deeper into this, because I'm sure parents and young women that are considering, you know, how to change their methodologies around this for their families is like, I'm sure there's some perked ears right now. So thank you for joining me today on Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. And we will have information in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rosalia, for joining me today on Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. Wow, sharing her powerful insights on child safety, tech accountability, and how we can reclaim our role as protectors and advocates was powerful. I hope you were inspired. And again, if you want to understand more, episode 70 with Julie Scalful with Mothers Against Media Addiction is something you can follow up that is prior to this episode. You can learn more about Rosalia and her work at consentparenting.com, and that's consentparenting.com, and follow her on LinkedIn. And you can also listen to her About Consent podcast for expert resources and interviews. If you're inspired by these conversations and want to be part of building a safe, informed, and empowered community, head over to latinasb2b.com. There you'll find access to exclusive interviews, resources for change makers, and tools to grow your voice and leadership strategies in business, tech, and advocacy. Join our growing movement, because when we rise, we all rise together. I'm your host, Teresa Gonzalez, and thank you for joining me on Latinas from the Block to the Boardroom. This episode was produced by Teresa Gonzalez and co-produced by Robert Lopez of createsaudio.com. Until next time, stay informed, stay loud, and stay connected to your power. Gracias.